You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
Hey, welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Folks, I'm actually doing this solo tonight. Joe will be back with us on Monday. He's recovering nicely at home, and he'll be back with us on Monday. Tomorrow, we are going to have Coach Dave Dobenmeyer in studio. Now, rumor has it that Joe might get out of his jammies and slippers and come by just to say hello to America's coach, Coach Dotmeyer, tomorrow. But no, seriously, he's mobile. He's fine. Everything went well. So he said, hey, you know, I could come back tomorrow. I said, no, just take the day. But stop by and visit. So that's what's going to happen. So we're going to have Coach Dave Dobenmeyer in studio tomorrow. Tonight, we've got a very great show for you planned, lined up. Of course, 8 to 10, the second 2 hours of tonight's program, we are going to have, I'm going to be joined by author, speaker, nationally syndicated talk show host Josh Tully. We had him on last night. He was co-hosting last night, and we had a marvelous discussion. As a matter of fact, I got so many emails saying, you know, that was one of your best shows ever. I'm glad you liked it, because I liked it too. And in fact, during the night, I had gone back and I just listened to the archives, part of the archives, and I thought, wow, man, he was like saying all kinds of like really great, you know, giving a lot of great information. And this is what we need to hear in these perilous times. Now, before we get to Josh Tully, I'm going to hit a couple of news items very quickly, and then bring a guy that I've known now for about a year. More than a year. I don't know. You know what? Time flies. So I don't know. He's been part of our organization for over a year, and his name is J.D. Hopwood. And he was at Ground Zero, New York City, on 9/11, on September 11th, obviously 2001. And many of the photographs that you see of 9/11, he could have or did take. All right. And as a matter of fact, it was interesting because at one of the conferences, we had met Jonathan Kahn, and you know the sycamore tree. Well, he was right standing underneath that sycamore tree. So we're going to talk to him about his experiences. And there's a reason for this. Not just to dredge up 9/11, but it all kind of fits together. Because what we're seeing right now is an unraveling of America. And as I said yesterday, America and the world is changing. As I mentioned, this is changing daily. The United States, we appear lost in lawlessness. Well, when did this happen? Well, many can affix arbitrary dates, but certainly 9/11 was a hinge point, a hinge moment in time. Everything changed on that day. Much like, of course, December 7th, 1941, and other dates in American history. But at present, we've got the country just unraveling. We are reaching a breaking point. I don't know how many people got to see the very uncomfortable Senate or the committee hearings with James Comey today, committee sessions. Well, come to find out, and I'm sure if you know, how many people out there really understand that this is not political theater as alleged by the progressives, by the Marxists, by the Democrats, or whatever you want to call them. This is dead. I mean, this stuff is serious stuff that's taking place. Well, come to find out, the FBI did not put Hillary under oath. She was not asked any questions under oath. There is no transcript from that 3.5-hour session, allegedly. What do you think of that? Now, that to me gives me the indication, obviously, that knowing myself as an investigator and having spent time with FBI agents, with federal law enforcement, I mean, they documented the heck out of everything, as I would and as I did as well. Well, to not document, to not put her under oath, to not produce a transcript, not have a stenographer there, or not have anything recorded. This is crazy. It's absolutely nuts. But what do you expect? Now, Hillary's not the only news, of course. The censorship in the media, and I mentioned this before, we are going to have to really learn to operate behind enemy lines. Now, if we are a constitutionalist, a Christian, if you're a Christian today, living in America, you're basically operating, living behind enemy lines. Target's on your back. It's not on ISIS. It's not on Islamic terrorists. Notice I did not fragment and say radical Islamic terrorists is Muslim terrorists. Target's on your back. The censorship is coming to you. InfoWars reporters were detained. Well, they were arrested. Disarmed and arrested. Anytime you're detained by any law enforcement officer, even at a traffic stop, you're technically under arrest. Just as a little FYI. They were disarmed and arrested, detained by federal agents yesterday near the Texas-Mexico border. Joe Biggs, he was on our program here a couple of weeks ago. He explained how he and Michael Zimmerman were disarmed after they were taken into custody alongside another reporter. I'm not sure if that other reporter was with them or what. They were held for 2 hours. Why? Now, reaching out and looking into this, this is basically harassment. This has nothing to do with obstruction of justice, endangering any federal investigation. This is harassment and engaging in activity that is ensuring that they won't embarrass the federal authorities. By the way, Joe Biggs and Zimmerman were told by federal officers that they would need to pay $230 each in order to get their firearms back. Really? Really? They were charged with misdemeanor criminal trespassing and threatened with felony charges if they returned to the area. Now, I do know that they have press credentials. Despite being told that the area was off limits to the public, investigation into the location, according to InfoWars, revealed the exact opposite to be true. This, again, is another form of lawlessness. This is what we're going to be running into. Now, we have to pick our battles. When did this all start, looking back? These are just a couple of headlines. You have the lawlessness that is Hillary Clinton. We have to understand how to work around that. You've got this morality, assault on our morality and spirituality coming at us like crazy. You've got this lawlessness, the attempt to censor, and all of this, it's hitting us right now. So saddle for battle. If you are a Christian, this is my view and my view alone. If you are a Christian and you are not prayed up and ready to go out there and make a difference, well, I don't know. Then get out of the way. You either lead, follow, or get out of the way. Be a leader. 9/11. We all remember where we were that day. How would you like to be at the World Trade Center, look up and see a plane crashing into the tower? J.D. Hopwood from Neptune Diaries, that's his website, neptunediaries.com. He's also our creative evangelist, as he likes to be called, for the Hagmann Report. He's on right now with us. We're going to be talking about a couple of issues on 9/11, and this really is when the military police state went into full gear. But he's got something very interesting, too, he took away from that day. Something in his possession, as well as memories and photographs. But I asked him to come on and talk about the events of that day and how they fit into the events of today. JD, are you with me?
Hey, Doug, how are you? I sure am. Bless you.
There you go. Okay, I just you're at a good level right there, and so you don't have to mute afterwards. JD, hang on just one second before we get started, I just want to mention to people portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Minuteman Rocket Stove. Oh man, Minuteman Rocket Stove. Have you seen this, JD? I know you've seen this. MinutemanStove.com. Go to HagmannandHagmann.com. Click on the link right there on the right to Minuteman Provision Company, Minuteman Rocket Stove. Folks, this is a high-end stove for your cooking needs. We have one here. We tried it out. Test worked out 100%. Eric, two thumbs up, and he should know. So there you go. Just go to MinutemanStove.com or go to HagmannHagmann.com and click on the link to Minuteman Stove. So, JD, I'm sorry to interrupt, but let's get started. Here you are, New York City, 9/11. Where do you want to start with this?
It's just such a crazy thing, right? What had happened was is I had graduated photography school right before that. And so about not too long after that, I moved there. And so, you know, it's an interesting thing because the world that we've suddenly uncovered in the last couple of years with all these prophetic guys doing their thing, the Daily Crows and all these different people uncovering prophecy in the headlines, I started to realize that you know, our Father is divinely purposed, and He spells it out for us in our days, every single day. And it just so happened that He put me there, literally underneath Jonathan Kahn's tree when the second plane came in. So it was crazy. So what's weird is after listening to your show, you know, people have me halfway convinced that maybe I saw some Project Bluebeam action, but I definitely saw the plane hit the building, right? So if the Project Bluebeam is that good, then we are in over our heads, that's for sure.
It's a whole different ball game then. Well, okay, what were you doing? I mean, you just graduated photography school. What were you doing down there? I mean, you were, I guess, finding yourself in downtown Manhattan was kind of, at that day, on that morning, is not exactly in your plans, right? I mean, or were you supposed to be right there? All right.
No, and that's the really bizarre part is that I had moved there in April before, and I moved there. I hit the ground running. I got a job at a printing press at a little design house called LICP Graphics in Brooklyn, and I also had the occasion to assist a few times with the Sports Illustrated guy, and so I was shaking and moving. I had plans, you know. I was going to build my little temporary earthly kingdom here on planet Earth, and get moving. You know, I wanted things. You know, I wanted to be successful and stuff. And so the Friday before 9/11, I had this little Pakistani boss, and he was like a Pakistani guy who grew up in Brooklyn. So you can imagine. He looked like a Pakistani, but he had like a Brooklyn whole thing going on. And so whenever I would get the Sports Illustrated would call, I would literally just dip out of work. I'd say, sorry, I got to go, you know, Sports Illustrated calls. So that Friday, he said, I've had enough. You need to make a decision. So for me, it was a pretty easy decision. It was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not gonna work here. And not go to Sports Illustrated if they'll have me, you know, even though I was only assisting at the time, you know, that's your entry into the photography world. So I quit / got fired. I like to say it like that. And so I'm from Boston originally, and you know, we grew up loving the Red Sox and all that stuff. And so after I got fired, I took all my photography gear and I thought, well, I'm going to take 2 weeks off, and I'm just going to do a photo essay of New York City. And so I took all of my gear, and I went. I had an apartment in Brooklyn, and the girl that I was dating at the time had an apartment in Lower Manhattan, right there on Fulton Street. So I took all my gear, went there for the weekend. So that Monday night, there was a Red Sox-Yankees game at Yankee Stadium, and my roommate called me up and said, hey, do you want to go? And of course you want to go if you're from Boston. You know, you want to go there and cause a ruckus and, you know, cause a problem at the Yankee Stadium. So we went.
I can't possibly see you doing that, knowing your disposition, you know. No, I can't. Okay, go on.
No, and can you imagine? I was Jonah. At the time, I was partying in the belly of the whale. So I was a prodigal son at the time. So I was going nuts. And, you know, Eric, if he's got the pictures I sent him, I had like real long hair and I was just going for it, you know? So anyway, so the Yankee game got rained out. So we went to a bar in mid Manhattan somewhere called the Rodeo Bar. And my friends, they were going to turn it on. You know, I could tell that it was going to be like a late night. And so I've had my issues with alcohol back and forth. So at the time I was like, you know what, I'm going to pass. And I took the train down to Fulton Street. And so there you go. So Boston sets, here's the setup. Boston Red Sox, Yankee game gets rained out. I don't go out with my friends for too long afterwards. I go to my girlfriend's. I stay there. Now, the weirdest thing was the year before I moved to New York, I had actually been taking private pilot's lessons in up north of Boston. So I was very familiar with airport sounds and, you know, the smell of jet fuel and all that stuff. You know, I was into it, man. I was only 10 hours away from getting my private pilot's license. So anyway, so that morning of September 11th, I wake up. And I hear a low-flying plane, and then I hear a boom. Now, something clicked in my brain that just wasn't right. Now, the thing about Lower Manhattan is they those buildings are so close together that when they fix the streets, they tend to put these big, giant steel plates down over stuff if they're not finished, right? And they'll just drop it down, and it'll make, you know, a bomb sound throughout the middle of the canyons, you know. It'll it's crazy.
Yep.
So, but all of a sudden it just dawned on me, like, wait a second, that was a low-flying plane. And then you know, I've been a conspiracy theorist since I was a kid. I got saved very young. I got saved on the whole 666 mark of the beast stuff. My aunt prayed with me on a beach in Rhode Island when I was 11. And, you know, I've been into the conspiracy thing, much to the dismay of my friends and family. But I've been at this a long time. So I took much notice of the fact that they tried to bomb those towers once before, right? So
1993. Yep. February 23rd, 1993. Yep.
Yep. And something in my brain clicked, and I was like, no way. So I ran to the window, and the windows of her apartment only faced the alley, and you could only see a building right next to it. And I looked down, and then funny enough, there's a Middle Eastern guy in the alley, one lone guy, and I yelled out, and I wasn't even really thinking so clearly. I was just sort of amazed that, and I said to him, hey, what's going on? He said, I don't know, something with the World Trade Center. And so that was it, and I knew. And so I clicked into high gear, and it was funny because my girlfriend at the time was on the phone. And so I looked at her, I was like, you better, let's go. And so she kind of gave me that, like, I'm on the phone look, like, shh, quiet. And so I was purposed. I started slamming the photography gear together and heading out the door. So she figured something was up too. So she got in speed and, got in step, and we hustled out, and boom, we go downstairs and we take a right out of the door. And then as soon as we take like 10 steps to the street, you look up and shaboom, the tower's on fire. And it was so weird because it was madness, but it was quiet. It was just the strangest thing, and people were like whispering, talking to each other. And so we started to hustle down the street. Now, I had just graduated photography school, and she had actually just graduated photography school. So here we are, two newbies hustling out on essentially the biggest thing ever, right? And we're moving down, and it's kind of like, what's going on? And you can literally, people are like on the street saying things like, it must have been a heart attack. A pilot who was flying a Cessna must have had a heart attack. Now, I've flown a Cessna, and a Cessna would literally bounce off and barely leave a scratch, right? It's a tin can with wings, right? And an engine. So I just knew that wasn't the fact. And so, but you still weren't sure, So we started hustling down the street, and we get to literally St. Paul's Church, the church that Kahn writes about in his book,
yep, The Rabbi Heart. Jonathan Kahn. Yep, yep, that's right.
Yep, yeah, and it was really weird because you know how in Revelation it talks about removing your lampstand. It's basically like, Jesus says basically like, do what I tell you to do or else I'm going to give the job to somebody else, right? So here's where this gets really weird. So I've been a Christian since I was a kid, and I've had like, faith. This was never, I've never not had faith in God. I just not in specifically in Jesus. I think that when I heard the story and it was explained to me and I heard his name in context for the first time at 11, it was as if I heard, I knew, you know what I mean? I just knew, and I knew, and I knew, and I knew. And that was it. Like, it was truth. And almost like before I even knew that I knew, it was truth, right? So yeah, so I knew. And so anyway, so we're sitting on that corner, and here's the weirdest part about being at Jonathan underneath that tree, right? So my girlfriend at the time had like left my side right at the block before that church. And so she went down south one block and then west one block. So we were both like standing on the same street essentially, but she was one block south from me. So the trajectory of the plane when it hit was such that when it hit that building and sprayed out that side of the building, I was directly underneath all that stuff. And
is that the first or second plane, JD?
That's the second one.
All right.
So okay, Eric has this stuff up on the screen. So you see that? So that building is the Millennium Falcon, I like to call it, but it's like a Millennium Hotel, that big black building. And so those leaves that you see on the right hand side, that's Kahn's Harbinger tree. And so why I say that whole, why I brought that lampstand thing up was the Father's been, talking to me, calling me, telling me to live set apart and do what he's been telling me to do for my whole life. But, I wanted to check out what the world had to offer, right? So when I got here, right, almost a year before this, I had been to New York City with that girl that I was staying with at the time, and we had been over on the Hoboken side, and we took pictures like in, I don't know, October or November of the year before. And so when I had left New York and went home to Boston, I got a new Photoshop program. And so I started to play games with it and, you know, just trick it out. And so one of the things that one of my professors in college had taught us to do was to concept, you know, basically like, you know, think up a business and then make all the stuff for it. You know what I mean? Like a full tilt package, you know, logo. You know what I mean, Doug? Like what we do with your stuff. So I started doing that. And so the day that I started doing that, there happened to be an eclipse, right? I don't know if it was a partial or a full or whatever, but there was an eclipse. And so I thought, huh, I know what I'll do is I'll do a thing called Total Eclipse Productions. So I go on, well, I think it was Alta Vista or some one of those stupid old search engines at the time, and I pull a picture of an eclipse, and then I pull some pictures of lightning bolts, and I throw them over this picture that I have of the city, right, that I took from the Hoboken side. And then, you know, I'm playing games, and then, you know, for whatever reason, I take a picture that I have of this really, like, you know, stern picture of Jesus on the cross where his eyes are peering into your soul. And I take that, and Photoshop has this thing where you can blend it, and I blended his face like into the clouds and stuff. And then I had lightning bolts coming out of the eclipse, you know, the sun eclipse and stuff. And so that was it, right? And so I left it. I didn't even think about that for like a long time until I moved to New York in April, and I got a job at that printing press. Now, when you work at a printing press, they gang jobs up. So they're like, they stack paper together and they put like 10 jobs up on the same piece of paper because they can buy these huge pieces of paper on a roll for cheap and then like whatever. So they just gang it up. It saves paper and stuff. So, but anyway, at the end of every day, there was always space at the end of a run. So for a graphic designer, it was like heaven because you could, and at the time, CDs were huge and people were selling CDs on the streets and they were doing jewel cases and whatever. So for me, I just made tons of business cards and stuff like that, right? I'd never worked at a printing press. I was right out of school. I was fresh. So I started printing stuff just like crazy, everything you can imagine. So I thought, huh, I ride the subway a lot, and all these people are in the subway. Not a lot, but at the time there were people in the subway who would hand out these Jesus tracts. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So they would be handing these tracts out, these old school tracts that have like 10 pages, and they're just like tracts. And I don't feel that way about them anymore. But at the time, I felt like, you know, poo-pooed them because they weren't highly designed and stuff like that. So I thought, oh, you know what? I can make a track on. I thought, you know what? I already have this design. It's totally cool with the lightning bolts coming out, striking the Twin Towers with Jesus's thing in the back. And I know, because, you know, that's essentially Revelation. You know what I mean? When Jesus comes back, lightning strikes, that whole twinkling of an eye business. That's probably where my head was when I was designing that, right? But I
made he's not going to be coming tiptoeing down. You know, he's not going to come tiptoeing. He's going to come on a lightning bolt, thunder, you know. We're going to know it, I guess, is what I'm
he's
saying.
He's swinging for the fences this time, you know. He's coming back, and he's not going to be gentle. It's not going to be sweet this time, you know. It's going to be rough. So, you know, New York is a weird place because if you go to New York and you live there for any period of time, I found that for me, I became a New Yorker, even though don't tell this to my Boston friends, but like it was easy for me to like become a New Yorker, right? And so when this all went down, it was just such a weird space for the city. And so for that, for so when that happened, right? Sorry, I just lost my train of thought. So when I had made that graphic and had it printed, right? So I thought, you know what? I'm going to have it printed. And so I put a Bible verse on that little business card, and I had tons of them printed. And I had, keep watch, for you know not when your Lord will come. The Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him, right? And I had these things printed, you know, by, you know, when they send you a business card stack and it's in that little box. I had like three or four or five of those, and then a couple of CD jewel cases where I stretched it and made it look stupid. But I had them printed, like, you know. Now, here's where I feel like
listen to this, folks. Well, oh, wait a minute. I'm not sure if that was the direction you're going to go, but okay, go on.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I made those things, and I had them printed way before the actual event happened, right? And essentially, I suppose I was supposed to, like, pass them out in mass before in the subways, right? I didn't really follow through on that, right? Like I said, I was Jonah the prodigal son. So that's sort of like a regret for me. But the fact is that I had these things made, done, and I gave some to my parents. I showed everybody. I thought they were the coolest thing ever. And I was going to this church. It was called Grace Fellowship in Nashua, New Hampshire, when I would go home. I think it's called Gate City Church now in Nashua, New Hampshire. There's this pastor named Paul Berube. I love that guy. And he had he was into the prophetic end of it a little bit. But anyway, so I had given a bunch to him. And so anyway, so I'm in New York City. This happened. So think about this. Because when you're a conspiracy theorist, you're paranoid, right? So
JD, I'm not so sure people heard or caught what was exactly on those tracks, the artwork, the graphic design. What was really at the epicenter of those tracks, the graphic image?
Yeah, well, the lightning bolts are literally coming out of the sky, striking exactly where the two planes hit those towers.
In the World Trade Center. That's right. Okay. I just want to, in case people missed that. The relevance right there. Yeah. Okay.
I'll send a picture to Eric right now if it didn't come up. And it's funny because, you know, the my website was just absolutely humming along like, you know, a hot knife through butter as of 20 minutes before showtime. And so as soon as showtime, you know,
hey, AJD, we're losing you. You got to turn off the vacuum cleaner, the microwave, or the coffee maker. I don't know what's going on, but we're losing you. No, it's your microphone, buddy. You and I had this problem before on calls. Excuse me, sorry about that. Didn't mean
all
to
right,
sniffle.
How's that? Better?
There, much better. There you go. All right.
Okay,
so
sorry
continue.
About that. I don't know why that happens. That happens a lot. So anyway, I just sent Eric an email with that picture. So anyway, so yeah, it was such a weird thing. So it was like, for me, it was the Father, you know, our Father in heaven literally showing me, like, I have a job for you, and you hear me, but all these other people don't, and you're listening, but you want to go run and chase girls and party. Like, what are you doing? So right after nine, it was weird, right? Because you would think that would have woken me up, but that it didn't. I basically spiraled out of control. They call it I bottomed out, right? So I went on like a decade long, you know, sojourn into the belly of the whale, right? And so
You're kind of an idiot, basically. I mean, really.
Total idiot. But I had my bright spots. Like, I would basically go, and I would be an idiot for a long time, and then I would come back, and I would, like, go do missionary work in Papua New Guinea or something. Like, and it wasn't like I was trying to pay penance. I was genuinely trying to work out my salvation with fear and trembling. But listen, sin is cunning and baffling and powerful. And it literally, like, it is so... It ruins kings. Think about that. Like, it, you know, so I'm not special, right? Like, I'm not special. I'm just I'm a skin suit that's fallen. And but here's one of the things. So the Father for sure wants to interact in everyone's life like this. It's not just me. And so basically it's like that whole ears to hear business. So anyway, I started to listen. And anyway, so I did. I cleaned up. And I stopped drinking and I stopped partying and
you really cleaned up, man. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
And what an amazing success story, folks. I mean, with JD, I've gotten to know him and I feel like I can call him, you know, you were an idiot. I feel like, you know, we have that relationship where I can say that to you. We say much worse to each other. Anyway. But so, no, I get that. Now, I don't want to run out of time here, JD, but... you on 9/11, and I know you've got so much important testimony on 9/11. You ended up grabbing, or 9/11 and the days after, you were running around taking photographs, and those people watching on YouTube can see the photographs. How'd you end up hanging out with Geraldo? Where'd that come from?
Oh yeah, that was funny. So here's how it happened. So the plane hits, and once I realized that stuff was all coming down on us, everybody literally on that block on the corner of St. Paul's, everybody started to turn. I have two frames left of on that roll of film. And it's literally like blurry, and you can see all of us running in like a blur. And so I started to run, and then the stuff started to come down, very much like when I was a kid and you know, a chestnut tree wind would catch it, and it was just terrible. And so stuff started hitting people, and it wasn't like all big stuff. There was some huge stuff, you know, like literally humongous things flying through the sky. But at that point, we had sort of turned, it was all like small stuff. And so I sent Eric a picture. I don't know if he put it up, but I got a piece that was about the size of my hand. And so anyway, there's this fat guy running next to me, and I'll never forget this guy's eyes. They were like as big as saucers. And I'll tell you what, a little small piece of whatever it was, Doug, like we said, like, I don't know if it's the building or the plane or whatever, but something that flew out of that sky hit this guy in the back of the head and literally took his head off. And I turn around and I look, and his skin of his face was still there, and blood was just gushing into the street, and it was just total chaos everywhere. So as soon as that happened, now I was a smoker, and so I did a wind sprint, and then I was out of breath. And I remember just thinking, like, man, you know, not only was I a smoker and I was winded, but I had also like just about run out of cigarettes. So anyway, so I walked back to the apartment, because now the girl is gone, right? I can't find my girlfriend. She had actually gone down one block and was not in the trajectory of any of the stuff flying out of the sky, right? And she had the presence of mind. She got perfect pictures that put her on the map worldwide. So whenever you see 9/11 pictures, they're not mine. They're hers, right? She's got the best pictures ever.
Don't wait a minute. Don't run away from what you mentioned earlier, because on the screen, for many people, and Eric can put it back up, is the piece of metal that nearly decapitated the man that was running next to you, basically. And you've got it. You've got it in your... Well, I'll just say this. You have it secured somewhere. I've seen it. And the reason... this is kind of important, because you've had... I don't want to say it analyzed, but some professional people have taken a look at it and said, what'd they tell you was?
Well, it was at the thing in Dallas, and a pilot came up to me as I was showing Chance, actually, and he said that to him, and he was 100% sure. He said that is a piece of a turbine, so from the engine. So, I don't know.
I looked at it. I don't know what it is, but it's interesting that whatever it is, well, you have it, and you know, it's. I find it very interesting that many people were trying to, and I'm sure many people walked away with souvenirs. But in this particular case, this piece here might have some evidentiary value in the future. I don't know, but certainly it's interesting to say the least. But go ahead. I wanted to make it clear about that piece of metal that people saw on YouTube.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Right. Yeah, and that thing, you felt it. That thing's heavy, man. That thing's solid, right? So that's, like, special. I've actually never felt weight like that in such a small piece like that.
It's dense. It's really dense, yeah, you know?
It was dense. And the way that it was honeycombed and stuff like that, I mean, it was really weird. But see, for me, right, so for me, I spiraled out of control after that whole thing. Like, at that point, I started really traveling overseas and, you know, running around trying to get away from life. Because at that moment, when that second plane hit, the reality of it all, like, that this wasn't a heart attack guy or anything like that, a pilot having a heart attack, that it was, you know, insane. So anyway, I went back to the apartment. I found that my girlfriend had gone back there to meet up as well. And, you know, it's a weird thing, because when she split from me, we had a bag of film, right? And so she took the bag of film. And so I only had one 24 roll in my camera, right? And so If I'd have had that bag of film, I'd be dead today. I'd be buried. I would have been buried in that 9/11 stuff. So then it was just, it gets even stranger, right? So as I go back to the apartment and she's there. And so we're like, ooh, thank goodness, you know, here. So we leave again. I'm like, let's go, man. Now we really, and I still had this picture in my mind. The towers, if you look, if you'd ever been there between them, you could look up and they would vanish up into the sky, right? And so.
Yeah.
People were
jumping.
The
optical illusion.
Yeah, and I just had this picture in my mind. See, I didn't go to any photography school. I went to the University of Massachusetts, and I studied under this totally great art photographer named Arno Minkinen. And so he taught me, like, you know, a picture is not just a picture. It can be sometimes, but it shouldn't be if you're an artist. So I wasn't trying to get, like, fluffy photos of 9/11. So I was thrown into this weird spot of being, like, a photojournalist with an artistic brain, right? So anyway, I had a picture in my mind of people jumping and me catching those jumpers while the towers were vanishing into the sky on fire. Imagine what a photograph that would have been. So we hustle back. We go right back down to St. Paul's Church. And when we get to St. Paul's Church, there's a cop there. And this cop, literally out of... think of the chaos that is. Like, there was just people everywhere. And this cop singles us out, and he's like, what are you guys doing? Imagine that. This cop looks at us. Both towers are on fire now. He looks at us, and he's like, where do you guys think you're going? What are you, photographers? And so I look at this guy, and I'm like, dude, just get out of the way. And so he looks at me, realizes that I'm actually going to go around him and go towards, you know, the madness. He grabs my girlfriend and he says, do not, if you follow this guy, you will die today. Do not go with him. And so this girl was more courageous than 99% of the guys that I ever knew, right? She did stuff. She was fearless. So I'm just like, I kind of thought like she was going to laugh at this guy. And so I went to go forward and I felt a tug at my arm. I turn around and I look and she's literally looking at me terrified. And uh-huh. she's like, just come with me. Just come with me. And I'm like, this is literally, I'm like, don't you get it? We are photographers put here. Like, we're going to be huge photographers. Like, we cannot turn our back, you know, in the photojournalistic creed of nonsense. And she's like, no way, come with me. So I was like, you know what? You have 2 minutes. And sure enough, within 2 minutes, boom, that building, the top cracked a little bit, and then they just came flying down.
Any evidence, in your view, any evidence of explosions prior to this? I mean, in your view, was this a take? And I know these sounds like old questions, and who cares at this point, but my question, when you looked at it come down, if you looked at it, explosions intentional demolition, or was it something else?
I for sure think it was intentional. I mean,
right.
Especially in hindsight. And here's the one thing that I can add to that. In memory, right, when people are like, what was peculiar about you? Anything weird? Yes, and this is what was weird, is within like, it felt like 5 seconds of these planes hitting the building, right? There were government agency people, and not cops. There were government agency people on every corner directing people where to walk. And they were in like, you know.
I mean, like, this is within an hour. Of the
no way, within way shorter than an hour, because it was all said right. And done in an hour, right? The buildings okay. Had come down in an hour. They were there within. I mean, let's put it this way: the first plane hits. I am literally on the street inside of 120 seconds, right? Right? I'm literally like on the street within 2 minutes tops, right? I was just, I mean, it right. was just so weird, right? I mean. What? I'm like right here. And so
But where did these agency people, the federal officers, come from? That's the question, too, to see that. The deployment, deployment. You couldn't have done this.
They weren't in, like, black suits or anything. They weren't, like, feds or anything. Like, you know, they definitely weren't, like, you know, FBI feds. These people, they were in, like, golf shirts, like, right? Like blue and white golf shirts. They were solid colors. It was either white or it was blue. And they were, like, you know, literally, like, they look like survey task takers. You know what I mean? Like
no,
survey.
I understand that, yeah.
But they were everywhere, and they were... And then here's the weirdest part, right? So they were just like, everybody, move it along. Nothing to see here. Just go, head that way. Just come on. Just go. And then, all of a sudden, literally, like, 2 minutes before... They started to freak out and swear and say things like, you know, get the F out of here, run. Like, it was weird how that. And I remember kind of thinking to myself, like, you know, because when you're a photographer and you've got the camera in front of you, there's an element of, like, it's a shield. It's a false sense of security, but, you know, kind of like, you know, shut up, I'm supposed to be here. Like, you know what I mean? But when they started freaking out like that, I still wasn't really paying attention. I was trying to get pictures, right? But then, man, I'll tell you what. Here's the only time of the day that I actually thought, like, this is it. I am dead. And I don't know if you've ever seen the footage. But when the building comes down, right, and it implodes, and it does that, like, mush. It was like a reverse mushroom cloud, right? Think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when that stuff, and it was like, imagine... If you could take sheetrock dust, just grinding hundreds of thousands of panels of sheetrock up with everything else that was in that, and suddenly this cloud was like faster than a speeding bullet. And I was looking down. So the building, the top cracked. We turned around, we snapped our photos, and then it started to come down, and you started to realize, like, my goodness, you know, and you weren't really sure if it was, like, in a tip or whatever, and, like, you know, so you know, get your photos and then run. And so when we turned and ran, we had ducked around a corner and were looking down a side street, and I'll tell you what, it was clear as crystal clear. And then suddenly it was night. It would literally day turn to night. All of a sudden, the smoke just goes flying. And I'm looking down a clear side street. And all of a sudden, you know, because it's all crisscrossed, right? It's all like a big, giant crisscross tic-tac-toe board. So smoke goes barreling down one street. And all, you know, but guess what? It took that left and was coming right at me too, right? So it just, like, filled the street up so fast. That was what was freaky. It was so fast. And suddenly, I was in the middle of changing my roll of film. Right. And so my back of my camera was open, and I was like, no way, man, this is a very expensive camera. I got to, like, get this before this stuff engulfs me. So I shut that thing, and then bam, I was in the pitch black. Now, my girlfriend at the time had found her way into a restaurant. And so I was in I've never felt like a blind person, but I did in that moment. I thought, I'm going to die. So I was trying to literally hold my shirt over my face and then find a wall. Right. So I found a wall with my hand, and then she somehow, through the picture that's up on the screen right now with the people through the window, literally, right, she saw me walking through that. And so she literally ran and grabbed me, and some guy was like, no, you can't let him in here. And, you know, she was like almost 6 feet, and she literally, like, you know, I don't know.
You were on the outside, she was on the inside, she was letting you in.
Yeah.
All right.
Pulled me in, and then what was really weird was that she literally, we sat there and we went to the end of the restaurant to get away from everybody. And so this guy follows us down because he saw our cameras, and he looks at me. Now, this is really like, this is kind of like before cell phones were the big thing, right?
Right.
So there were still plenty of people who didn't have cell phones. Like, it was not, you were like, you know, making money if you had a cell phone, right? So this guy comes up to me and he goes, hey, are you guys photographers? And it's kind of like, dude, look at our necks. Yes. Look at these cameras. Yes. And he looks and he goes, they just flew a plane into the White House. And I looked up at him and I was like, are you kidding? And he was a cop. He had a badge on his belt. And I looked at him and I was like, how do you know that? It was kind of preposterous that he would know that, right? And he looked at me and he had a cell phone and he snaps the cell phone shut and he called me a jerk and he walked away. But that was my lesson to not be mean to people ever, regardless of the circumstance. But at that moment, when he told me that they had crashed a plane into the White House, every ounce of me wanting to like be a journalist and get more pictures and stuff like that crumbled. And I thought, we're in World War III. Jesus is about to get back. I am not right with the Lord. So in the last 2 minutes of this thing, because I know we're going to the top of the hour, that's the whole point of my testimony, right? Is that I was a kid who knew the Lord and I ran, right? So there's a couple of verses where it talks about like, if you knew the Holy Spirit and you ran away, like you're, you know, doomed forever. And like, guess what, guys and girls? Brothers and sisters, people out there, that is not the truth, because I can tell you this. A couple of years ago, I was literally like, you know, bottoming out with a washed up 30, you know, something year old. Now I'm 40 something, but like I was over, it was over for me. Like it was just like nowhere to go. And now here's what happened. I gave my talents to the Lord. You know where it talks about your talents and
that's
people,
right.
Some of them buried them and all that stuff, and people think, well, that means money. Whatever they want to think, I don't care. When I took my skill sets and instead of trying to like put it towards me glorifying me and my world and my life and look at me, I'm so freaking special, all that stuff, when I put it towards putting the message out, Doug, look at what has happened.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So for all you people out there who are struggling with drugs and alcohol or sexual sin or whatever you're dealing with, and you've heard the voice of Jesus and you know that you're backslidden, you know that you're far out there, you know that you have a problem with all this stuff, drugs, alcohol, whatever, I just want you to sit down and I want you to think right now, and I want you to pray, and I want you to give your life back to Jesus right now. And I want you to just say, you know what? If JD can do it, I can do it. If JD, that total, just about homeless piece of garbage, that sinner JD, if he can turn his life around and the Father can use somebody like him to do good and to preach the good news of the gospel to the lost, he can certainly use me. And I'll tell you what, there are people out there listening right now that you can get activated. You have a sphere of influence. You have a circle of people around you.
Oh, yeah.
You're modeling Jesus to them right now. And you're not doing a good job right now. But you know what? You can change that in a minute. So just turn around. Turn around, because your Father is waiting for you right now. He's waiting for you with a robe, a ring, and a banquet. Okay? He's waiting for you. If you're a prodigal and you're out there right now, just turn around. He's waiting. He literally wants you back in the fold. Now listen, we all started off dirty. Okay, and our Father has an immaculate mansion, and he is not going to let you in if you're dirty. So you need to get hosed down, and it's going to stink, and it's going to be painful, because while we were out playing around in the mud and getting scratched up by in the briars and getting poison ivy and all that stuff, he's got to hose us down, because we ain't getting in the house unless we're clean. So I admonish everybody, you know, give your life back to Jesus. Yeah.
Interesting account, brother. And not quite where we were going to take it, but it's inspired by the Holy Spirit where we took it. Oh, I appreciate your testimony. Thank you. And come back on, because we have more to talk about, but yeah, we're at the top of the hour. So thank you so much.
Sure.
I appreciate that. Neptune Diaries, man. Neptune Diaries for the images. And of course, some are up on HagmanReport.com as well, but Neptune Diaries. And yeah, listen to them. We're backslidden, but you know, there's salvation. And thanks for all you do. Appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care. Right. Bye, Eric.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You know, JD does a lot of the graphics and such, and some people know him, and many of you don't. Many of you do. Well, there you got to hear his firsthand account. And again, not quite where we were going to go. However, sometimes the testimony is more important. Folks, before we hit the top of the hour, this story is breaking, and I've looked into this, and of course, I do believe that we have an imminent threat on our hands. WorldNet Daily is reporting about a refugee terrorized, or this refugees terrorized Minnesota neighborhood for 3 straight days. Leo Homan had written about this. Go to WorldNet Daily and read about this woman who gives a chilling firsthand account of Muslim rape threat. Folks, the Muslim men in this country are in this men. They're coming after our families. This is part of the larger picture of the cultural attack on our culture and families. We're going to be right back with Josh Talley.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.